Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. Good to have you be with us. And again, it is March 12th. We say that at the top of every show because a lot of you download these programs and figuring out which one am I listening to. So you're listening to Monday, March 12th. Good to have you be with us each and every week. Appreciate you telling your friends about us. Also, a special thank you goes out to our sponsors who are so faithful to help us keep this broadcast on the air and make it possible for us to come to you each and every week. Let's get started with an update on what's going on in the markets as we do each and every week. Joe Farr, good to have you on the program. What's going on with let's start off by last week. What happened?
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
Well, it was a very there was a lot of events last week, and I'll get into those, but in the end there was virtually no movement. Very little intraday movement even as compared to the week before where there was a good deal of intraday movement. But, yeah, the events, when you think about it, the jobs report and the Greek debt situation were both a big part of the week, and both came in pretty much as what people expected. Greece was able to convince enough of their debt holders to give up the debt that they had and replace it with a lesser amount. And I think they wound up getting like 85% of the holders volunteered to give up their holdings and take the lesser amount. And so rather than what could have been a very difficult, ugly default, it was, somewhat of an organized default, I guess. Is that an oxymoron, an organized default?
An organized default. I think that might be a good definition of an oxymoron, yes.
So that has relieved the market of some amount of uncertainty, at least for the next few weeks. They have that big payment due on the 20th, and this is going to release the money, the 140 billion euros that they've been promised if they would accomplish a few things. And I believe this is sort of the last part of that. And so the market has been able to receive some relief from that uncertainty. The other thing that came out, always a big event, is the jobs report. It came out Friday and was favorable. Again, 227,000 jobs created, which is a little better than what people thought.
Solid.
That's 3 months in a row with jobs over 200,000. So it's showing a good trend. The unemployment rate stayed where it was. So, again, no big surprises there. So no surprises in Greece, no surprises in jobs report. The rest of the economic events that came out were somewhat mixed, but most of them are pretty close to expectations. So even the Dow didn't move a lot. It did have that drop. It had some intra-week movement, 200-point drop on it was Tuesday or Wednesday, I believe.
Yep.
But wound up being up 25 for the week. So.
Yeah. So it's pretty much a pretty stable, unchanging week for last week. But we look forward to this week. It looks like we've got a pretty crowded, busy economic calendar coming up.
We really do. The most important of which is going to be the Fed meeting that is going to take place on Tuesday. The statement will be released at 2:15 Tuesday, and probably again there won't be a lot of surprises. The market would be interested to see, as you remember 2 weeks ago from the release of Fed Chairman Bernanke's testimony before Congress, really moved the market in a negative way because it showed no signs of another QE3, and probably we'll see the same thing happen here. Probably see no signs of QE3, but without that same sort of result. But the Fed meeting is always a big event.
Big
also
event.
Also on Tuesday is retail sales, which is a big barometer of the market. Thursday is PPI, Friday CPI, so inflation measures will be coming out. Also on Thursday, some manufacturing data, New York Empire State Index, Philly Fed, Friday industrial production.
Yep.
And then throw in on top of all that, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, treasury auctions of 3s, 10s, and 30s in that order.
Any anticipation on the treasury auctions, Joe, how they're going to go based on how they have been going? Any indication or any thoughts?
Well, I got to believe that there's going to be good demand. I don't think it's going to push treasury prices and therefore MBS prices terribly higher.
No.
I think if there were an issue, it'd be the other way.
Yeah, it'd be the other way. Appreciate it so much. And I know you're off traveling this week, as am I, Joe. So safe travels to you. Appreciate you and your crew bringing us this update. And, folks, if you do not have this service, you got to get MBS Quote Line. You know, this last week was kind of a stable week, but when it gets volatile, I cannot tell you the number of testimonials I hear about customers that use this service and how it's allowed them to time their locks and time their events such that they're able to make money. Folks, this is a service that truly can help you make money. We appreciate it. Joe Farr, have a great week. And
Thank you for those kind words.
Well, we appreciate it. It's the truth. It's the truth. It works.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to mbsquoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
mbsquoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. I realized during the break that I forgot to mention at the beginning of the program that we have a special guest, Tom Piercy, managing member of Interactive Mortgage Advisors, located in Denver, Colorado. He will be talking about the value of servicing and the fact that servicing can be traded. He is recognized as an expert in that area of trading loan servicing rights, and you're going to find the information he's going to be presenting very valuable. As we do each and every week, we have Alice Alvey and her crew bringing us the greatest, latest information. I don't know if it's always so great, but it's always the latest information. And she does a great job of bringing to us updates of what's going on in the world of regulation, legislation, and the impact it'll have on our business. Alice, good to have you on the broadcast. What do you have for us today?
Well, thanks, Dave. Well, you know, as usual, FHA is keeping us on our toes. So last week, we had FHA come across with its new mortgagee letter about the mortgage insurance premium increases. And the good news with that was the announcement of the change to the streamlined refinance MIP. I'm calling it kind of our mini version of FHA HARP, right? We're not necessarily getting the full appraisal waiver, but we are at least getting where now there's a benefit to the borrower from a mortgage insurance premium standpoint to get a new FHA streamline. That really helped a lot because the increase in the MIP in the last round really put some borrowers in the position of not being able to refinance. Now, they still have to come to closing with cash out of pocket to pay for their closing costs, but check out this mortgagee letter. It is effective June 11th, and it was mortgagee letter 2012-4. And so effective June 11th of 2012, the new streamlined refinance MIP is going to only be 0.01 basis point. Yes, that is $10 on a $100,000 loan. I had people calling up going, is that a typo? And it's not. That is the new upfront mortgage insurance premium for a streamlined refi. And then back to the 55 basis points for the annual premium that's then divided up by 12 and comes into a monthly premium. So that's the good news for the streamlined refis. The not so happy news for the other loans, for the purchases, is going to be the increase of the upfront MIP, which got pushed back a week. So instead of it being April 1st case numbers, it will be April 9th. And then jumbo loan MIP increases go into effect also on that June 11th of 2012 date. So read the mortgagee letter. Make sure you understand what it means. We did have the MBA FHA subcommittee group last week and hashed out some of the details that we know FHA still needs to answer a few questions on this. But overall, I think the mortgagee letter addresses everything that we need. Be careful. You can't order case numbers unless you actually have a full application. So FHA will be monitoring that. Also in the president's announcement about this FHA MIP change was also an announcement for changes to VA. Now, VA's programs are changes are really more servicing related. There really wasn't a lot in there that was going to help those of us on the front end or the sales side. So we continue to watch, you know, the remaining pieces of FHA work their way through the system. We did get an update from Len Wolfson of the MBA at our meeting last week. He is a government affairs coordinator. I believe that's his title. He's a lobbyist over there at MBA. And he was giving us an update on the FHA legislation that's still pending. You know, there was stuff out there about potentially changing the loan to value, about adding additional underwriting requirements. You know, that starts to get some legs, but right now it's not in a place where we have to worry about it for you. We'll keep you posted as the MBA helps us watch that. The guarantee fee battle was fought and won again last week. I really do have to say the Mortgage Action Alliance really helped make this come off the table. I was getting emails from Ohio and Michigan and, you know, different state associations going, get on the bandwagon, click here, and let your congresspeople know we're not going to use a guarantee fee increase to do a Gulf Coast cleanup. So, you know, it seems to be the thing when people need money, they're going to try and look at the guarantee fee. So here's another one we have to watch for. New Senate bill, Senate Bill 2162, a project to rebuild the USA and foreclosed homes. This is great. I love the idea, right? Let's use government money to purchase foreclosed homes, rehabilitate or demolish. I mean, there's a lot of areas out there that really could use $15 billion is this bill. And you know what, folks? The first sentence in this says, out of the money is going to come from out of any money in the Treasury not otherwise appropriated. Okay, here's my question. If there's $15 million that's not appropriated, I'm in shock because didn't we just have all kinds of committees and working groups and budget issues going on? Well, I don't think we have a spare $15 billion somewhere. We couldn't come to agreement on that number in the past. So I'm really curious if this bill is then going to be something that now has to – someone's going, oh, here, let's do a G-fee increase for this because at least it's housing related. So I'm going to watch this one closely to make sure that we know exactly where someone thinks this money's coming from. Once again, I mentioned this last week, we have House Bill 4058 that was introduced in February that is looking again to try and allow certain mortgages in bankruptcy to have a principal write down to give the judges that authority. So you do want to watch out. We will keep an eye on that one for you as well. So we also have House Bill 4076. This was a little newer. It's a proposed amendment to the Truth in Lending. It would prohibit an employer of a mortgage loan originator from reducing the LO's compensation if the APR of the loan is reduced after the initial APR. Now, I thought LO Comp already stopped any change in the LO's compensation as a result of interest rate, and I thought we did a really good job as an industry in getting there. So I'm not quite sure why this bill feels it needs to close up a loophole unless someone found one and has been manipulating it and cutting a loan officer's compensation if the APR goes down. So we'll check into that one a little further and see what's going on with it. Another quick update. The FHA seller concession rule proposal, remember this? We talked about it last week that FHA does have on the table a proposed rule to reduce that the seller can only pay up to 3% or $6,000, whichever is greater. Someone came up with a really good point on this. What about, say, a $50,000 loan, right? So on a $50,000 loan, if you say the borrower is able to pay up to $6,000 in costs, that's a 12% contribution rate. So now it's higher for the lower loan amounts than it was before. So it says the greater of, and I think FHA was thinking it would be capped by the term actual closing costs, you know, that it couldn't be that high, but we don't assume anything anymore. So we're making sure FHA didn't make a mistake in that wording. We believe that, you know, it's not meant to be able to allow $6,000 even on super low loan amounts above the actual costs. So make sure that you get a chance to propose or comment on that seller concession proposed rule. You can go to the Federal Register, go to gpo.gov, and search, put in a search for FHA seller concessions. So watch your dates. Here's your date watch. Heads up, April 5th for mandatory compliance for the AML policy. Remember, you can go to FinCEN.gov, FinCEN's website, and they have lots of free information to help you get started with this. Also, the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association is going to be putting on a webinar March 20th if you want to jump on that, MMLA.net. Let's see. And I think that about gets me to where I need to be in this this week's update. As a heads up, next week I'm going to be talking a lot about the HARP program. We have all the details on that. We've been speaking to folks all around the state about the opportunities and challenges and so forth with that program, and we're going to be focusing on HARP next week, so make sure you tune in. And now I will kick it back to you, Dave. Thank you.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back. Good to have you be a part of the broadcast again today. Normally we'd be introducing the Profit Doctor about this time, but the Profit Doctor is airborne for Hawaii. He's heading to Hawaii for some much-needed time off. He says he's going to slip in a little business, go visit our friends over there at the Bank of Hawaii and a few other places, but we hope he has a great time, take some time just to relax there in the beautiful state of Hawaii. Appreciate the opportunity to have him be a part of the broadcast on a regular basis, but it is time for him to take some time off and enjoy himself. So, Andy, Profit Doctor, aloha. Have a great time over there. I often get asked, how many people listen to your broadcast, Dave? Do you have any idea of how many people listen on the Internet? We're finally able to get some statistics in. What's really astounding to me is I recently learned that over 76,000 people have downloaded this broadcast. We had 123% growth in listenership last year alone. By all measurements, it appears we are growing with listeners each and every month, and we want to say thank you to many of you who have taken the time to tell others about the broadcast, have made posts on their Facebook page, on LinkedIn, or Twittered about the program. We really appreciate you helping us get the word out. We do this as a public service. We're not doing this to make much money at it at all. In fact, it's a break-even deal at best, but we have a real passion to help our industry at a time when it really, we have got some serious struggles going on. But there is optimism. There's really some great opportunities. I personally believe this is probably some of the best and most interesting, while being challenged, some of the most challenging times, also some of the greatest opportunities present themselves in these kind of times. And that's what we're really wanting to make this radio broadcast about, help you understand the challenges that are facing us, and then also create an awareness of opportunities of where and how to prosper. Starting this last month in February, we started a series of broadcasts on the importance of considering a strategy of retaining loan servicing. We've had some excellent guests talk about why you should, what is the theory behind it, what is the practicality of it, what are the challenges of retaining servicing. I encourage you to go back and listen to some of those broadcasts. We've had some outstanding guests really lay it all out there for you. One of the questions I've received since we started this series of broadcasts, and it's come from those that are really giving serious consideration to this, and yet are not totally convinced. They're not sure that this is a good fit for them, but they're willing to get into it and try it. And they're saying, but Dave, if I do get into this business model, is this something I'm going to be stuck with? In other words, once I enter a business strategy of retaining servicing, am I stuck with it for 30 years? And the answer is no, you're not. And our next guest is going to get into the discussion of the value of servicing and the trends that have we've witnessed over the years. I've been at this business for 37 years. I've watched some pretty amazing swings in the valuation of servicing. The reality is you're not being paid much for it, if anything, right now. Very little. And so you retaining the servicing, you're not going to be giving up a lot of income, contrary to what some might want to suggest or the rate sheets might want to tell you. Or you can go back and listen to the previous programs, as we said earlier. It is a time that if there was ever a time you should continue to consider retaining servicing, the time is now. So, and once you start retaining it, it is a valuable asset. And so there's two reasons you might want to trade it at some point. You find out, you know what? Retaining servicing just isn't a good fit for me. I want to get rid of the servicing and I want to sell it. Guess what? It's saleable, very saleable. And our next guest, as I started to say earlier, is an expert in this area. Our guest, let me get him introduced. Get him on the stage here and get us a little drawing from his wisdom. Our next guest, today's guest, is Tom Piercy, managing member of Interactive Mortgage Advisors, located there in Denver, Colorado. Tom has dedicated his entire professional career to the secondary markets, and he has developed a specialized expertise in the valuation and trading of mortgage servicing rights as well as whole loans. Tom, good to have you on the broadcast. We really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to be a part of our broadcast. And let me lead off with this question. As we discussed before the broadcast, there's no question that there is a verifiable resurgence of interest in retaining servicing. Tom, why do you think this is the case?
Well, hello, Dave, and thanks for having me on the show. The answer to that question is pretty simple. Just as you addressed, the value that you're receiving from your traditional secondary market participant with the aggregators has dropped significantly, yet all of the models and valuation parameters point to an asset that is significantly more valuable than what's being paid in the marketplace through the loan execution sales.
Hi, Tom. This is Alice Alvey. We might have lost Dave there as I'm looking at the board here, but it's my turn to ask a question anyway.
So that's great. Hey, Alice. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. You know, Basel III, however you want to say it, I hear people say it all different ways, you know, changed that, the Tier 1 capital ratio, you know, and when we talk about it being formed 4.5%, you know, many of the banks already have that, but, you know, there's concerns into how those requirements are changed. I mean, do you see this at a very high level, at that level with capital for the banks? Is that having an effect on the supply and demand of MSRs along with the value of the asset for those who retain the servicing?
It sure does. I mean, this was something that came into light a couple of years back. Now, most of us never worry about Basel III. It's not even
right.
Part of it. But, you know, there's a lot of bankers out there that this does influence their life. And, you know, let's face it, this industry was dominated by five major banks, Wells, Chase, B of A, GMAC, and Citi. And when this came about, you bet that the calls were coming into us from people within these institutions wanting to get their arms around how we can solve for it. So banks are absolutely concerned about this because, in effect, what it does, it takes their Tier 1 capital, where MSRs are part of the Tier 1 capital calculation, from 50% down to 10%.
That's a big drop.
It's a significant drop. So consequently, MSRs are now viewed much differently by these larger banks.
And so, I mean, did that have, I know B of A then pulled out. Is this kind of at the crux of that? And then kind of a two-part question, what's the impact of that? I mean, I know we've got customers who are just feeling it from a volume standpoint of the exiting of B of A, but what about that in terms of, you know, servicing value and the impact it's having on small servicers?
Well, you know, and it's one of several things that have certainly surfaced, you know, since the meltdown or the Great Recession. But, you know, without question, if you have to limit the level of MSR, yet you are a major banking institution with retail banking customers, your emphasis is going to turn to your customer first. So, you know, the wholesale channels or the correspondent lending channels that were operated by these major banks, as you look over time, you have seen there is a correlation from, you know, whether it's the Great Recession or the introduction of Basel III or the ongoing negotiations with states' attorneys general as relates to servicing compliance, there's a correlation to all of these banks contracting on their third-party channels, and their emphasis is certainly turning to their own retail bank customers.
So I was able to dial back in. Can you hear me all right? I'm in with my cell phone. One of the questions I have is, do you expect others like GMAC, Chase, and Citi to follow B of A's example?
Well, maybe not to the extent. We you know, the announcements have been made by B of A with regard to their intentions with servicing. You know, they're basically looking to sell all, if not a majority, of their servicing away. But, you know, look at what I was just referencing. B of A, Chase, Citi, you know, GMAC, which is a part of Ally, they're all getting out of the space. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised in the near term if we see those companies be, you know, reduced to maybe $10 billion a year type producers that are focused solely on their bank customer. We know the rumors. We've seen the headlines. Ally's trying to sell GMAC. You know, don't be surprised to see GMAC have a new owner within the next 12 months. There's significant fundamental change taking place at that level.
So if in fact we're seeing that change take place, you know, and originators are giving this consideration, what should they be giving in your prior list of priorities as consideration before retaining servicing, Tom?
Well, you know, first off, I guess you need to understand the value of it. And so as you've alluded to, you know, we've got generationally low interest rates with a credit box that I'm sure every loan officer listening to this show understands has tightened significantly. And so I've got two significant components that add to the value of servicing: prepayment speeds as well as defaults. And I've got natural market elements today that are providing or mitigating those risks significantly to the asset. Prepayment speeds are down, are going to be down considerably with these type of low interest rates on a go-forward basis, and certainly with the credit box as tight as it is, you would expect the default curves to be substantially less than usual. So I've got a value proponent to the asset, and I have to ask myself, do I want that value to come in over time versus giving it away up front? And that's really what you do by selling a service release transaction today.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring those up because, Tom, when I listen to someone, you know, like yourself with all this wealth of knowledge on that market, I kind of compare it to when I'm listening to my investment advisor, and people start to try, and they try and give me trending information to try and predict the future, right? That's all you can do. So, because I don't have the time to do the research on my own, so I have to kind of count on the experts to do that. Well, I know when I talk with my investment advisor and they look at the past, I don't like when they start including how wonderful it was in 2000, right?
Right,
And then you see everything drop off and you go, no, just give me historical future trends based on how ugly it's been in the last couple of years. So in your case, it almost kind of sounds like the opposite of that. It sounds like today's market conditions are really favorable for these two components with the prepayment speeds and the defaults. So help me make sure, you know, how do I research this? You can give me models, I know, as of today, but is there a way to stress test that? And how do I research this, or can I just count on you? Tell me about that.
Well, certainly. I mean, obviously, you know, there are several others in this industry like myself who have focused on this asset for some time, and I think it would be important to you know, gain insight from as many people and to pick up the phone and talk to experts like us. On, you know, some of the people you've had on your show, such as United Capital Markets and Austin Tillman and Dave Stevens, other two very good resources for people to discuss. You know, what you really, you know, what we utilize is you take prior scenarios and you look at the events and the results both before and after certain time frames, and you realize that there are cycles to every market. And so in being able to assess those cycles and where you are in the cycle and then understand what is the probability projecting out going forward of repetition, if you will, that's really very, very important. And so there are several experts and advisors in this industry that have been around, have seen, and certainly you know, the sky is not always blue, and we have to recognize that. We have to understand what scenarios create the thunderstorms and the problems along the way. But, you know, today the environment is such that the valuation of servicing is considerably better from an economic perspective versus the market perspective.
Oh, so that's interesting. So is there a base level then of monthly production that a company should be doing before they consider retaining MSRs?
You know, there's really not, and here's why. And let's go back to the economic perspective, and I just want to point on something. For the first time in my career, and I've been doing this for 25 years, you know, the 3.75 conventional fixed rate note today has a duration going out beyond 10 years. I've never had, you know, duration,
wow,
which is life expectancy, to go out that far. And so if I'm originating $5 million a month, $10 million a month, or $100 million a month, and I look at what I'm being paid if I were to sell released versus this expectancy, this duration, if I can save a nickel on a dollar or a nickel on $10, I always want to save a nickel, right?
Right.
And I think the structure in today's world with regard to the ability to retain servicing through utilizing partners in acting as your subservicer allows for one to retain servicing at all levels.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dave. I was just going to throw in, I remember when we were saying 7 years, and then it dropped down to, you know, threes and twos, and people went, what do you mean seven? It's never going to go back to seven. So, I'm you know, 10 is something I don't think people thought was going to come back.
Yeah, and, you know, and again, these are all probabilities, right, based on models and projections, and it certainly, you know, does not mitigate the risk entirely. I mean, if we have any issue, and we've heard Joe Farr talk about markets and the impact, and we are no longer a market that solely is influenced by our domestic policy. So, you know, we could have some sort of calamity that causes rates to drop another 100 basis points. Well, that certainly is the risk that is tied to this asset, but there are ways to hedge that risk, as Austin has discussed. But, you know, you have to understand, too, the probability. And the probability of loans prepaying, again, is substantially less in this environment today, and it's substantially less than any environment we've ever seen. And that's what's causing that type of analysis.
Well, let's go to strategy. I love strategy. It's one of the favorite things I like to consult on. And so let me ask you a strategic question as people are looking at this strategically. Is this a time to be holding to maturity, or is this you recommending a strategy of selling periodically into the bulk market after collecting a service revenue for some period of time for a few years? What's your recommendation, or what are you seeing at this point, Tom?
And you know, this is the classic advisor answer, but it depends, right? But in reality, let's understand, by not selling service released, an originator is reducing the amount of cash initially coming through, which will have an impact on capital. So consequently, you know, the question that one must ask initially, putting all the other questions aside that have been addressed throughout the last few weeks, is, you know, what is my capital position, and what would be my capital position on a go-forward basis? Depending on the answer to that question, servicing creates a tremendous amount of cash flow that can be counted upon over time, particularly when we have slower prepayments or lower default rates. So consequently, in my opinion, I do believe you build up franchise value through the retention of servicing. And so this is a very good time to be building up greater franchise value, building up your balance sheet with greater assets. However, we know that you need capital or cash to grow your business, to expand. You may have situations that just require emergency funds, et cetera. And so, you know, keeping track of the bulk market, of the ability to sell into the secondary market, is important. And you can participate in that, whether it's all or none or a portion of your overall portfolio.
So as we're looking at the fact that, you know, Congress and FIFA and everybody's trying to regulate servicing and come up with one set of, you know, minimum servicing control standards, what role does that proposed change mean to companies who are considering retaining, or are there other changes they should be aware of before they consider retaining?
Well, you know, without question, we historically, I guess in any business, you have to say that you can project for market movements and market cycles, et cetera. The one thing it seems like we really cannot control and things come out of the blue is legislation. And so whether it's regulatory environment or, you know, states, attorneys general, et cetera, that does have an impact on this industry. The one thing that I would say, if someone is beginning to retain servicing, where you can protect yourself from those type of issues is truly partnering up with an established subservicer, a provider of servicing to third parties who is built a model around maintaining compliance and keeping up with all of the necessary regulations, so as to not have to develop that on your own. And I think that's
are recommending working with a subservicer versus if you're first starting out. You are recommending work with a subservicer rather than building your own servicing platform.
I do, and I know there's been some discussion contrary, but I think realistically the core efficiency and the type of yield that can be achieved, it takes a type of, you know, a core portfolio size.
Yeah.
And if you're starting out, you can obtain the efficiencies by partnering up with someone who is subservicing or has a much larger portfolio. And again, I think the bigger issue is just simply the compliance and regulatory environment and what those servicers do on a day-to-day basis as their focus that allows you to do what you do as an originator and a participant in the capital markets.
Yeah, because it really is just taking on a whole new business strategy. I think people are getting that feeling now. They recognize that, I think, overall, that setting up servicing is almost more complicated today than just setting up an entire origination platform from application through shipping and insuring. So
yeah.
The complexities are there. So I have to ask you, is there a large discrepancy between the bid and ask price of MSRs in today's market?
Well, and there is. I think if someone, and let's go back, we had a very similar environment as we do today 3 years ago in 2009. And, you know, you'll recall, the week before Thanksgiving, really that Wednesday before Thanksgiving in 2008, interest rates dropped precipitously. You know, all the major aggregators pulled their pricing way back. And that really continued through the summer of 2009 in the fourth quarter. You know, the difference today is we just don't have as many of those aggregators still around, and those who are there are certainly keeping the pricing down. What we do have is a scenario where this sector of the industry is grossly undercapitalized today. So consequently, the buy side it can be very selective. Now, there's a tremendous number of bids. I say tremendous, but, you know, There's certainly a bid. There's a number of bids out there to allow for a market, but the reality is that the supply side is greater, and we do have this environment right now where there's just simply not enough capital. So the bid-ask spread is fairly wide, and that's why I keep saying, you know, the variance between market versus economic value, you know, that spread is pretty wide. But, you know, as Dave was questioning at the front end, it's not to say that you're married to this asset and now you've got to live with it for the next 10 years or 30 years. There are ready, willing, and able purchasers who have an appetite for all levels, whether it be a $10 million portfolio, $100 million portfolio, a billion, or $10 billion. Bids are being received, but, you know, the values are down today, and we're forecasting those to remain down for the foreseeable future.
So I want to kind of stay on that topic just for a second then. So So if I think I'm, because that's my risk, right? I'm looking for an exit strategy here is kind of where our conversation is going. So the buyers can be selective. So I have kind of a two additional questions to this. Is the information that's out there that a buyer has to provide really much more transparent than it ever used to be? Has that part of the process improved so that purchasers can be more comfortable about the detail? Because obviously there were some problems with that in the past. And then, you know, secondly, if they decide to hang on to it for a short period of time, do you expect we'll still be in this window of, you know, maybe they've actually lost money if they've only been able to hang on to this for a couple of years and find they need the cash?
Well, I mean, again, if you look at the multiples that are being paid to originators today on new production, in most cases, net-net, they're below a 3 multiple. In many cases, they're below a 2 multiple.
Yeah, okay.
So if I'm able to build servicing up and recognize, you know, 12 to 18 months worth of cash flows off of it, and then I go out and sell it and get a 2 to 3 multiple, I'm really ahead of the game at the end
sure.
of the day. And that's in current market conditions. If you see the supply side begin to shorten relative to being shipped to the aggregators, so meaning more people begin to retain and the supply side begins to shrivel, then you're going to see the demand side or the bid begin to increase over time, along with the fact that you're going to see at some point interest rates begin to move back up, which will have a natural slowdown in production as well. So, with the whole probability discussion, you should see greater values over time, which would make your investment in this asset today a very positive one.
So I guess kind of that transparency issue. What about counterparty risk? You know, obviously borrowers don't make their payment. You know, what do you hear about counterparty risk? How does this apply to servicing?
Well, counterparty risk is a significant issue. And, you know, I'm sure every originator out here listening has been faced with some repurchase demand, whether it's been from, you know, the aggregator that you've sold to, your correspondent lender, or if you have sold directly to Fannie or Freddie.
And it's probably because of an appraisal. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding, but, you know, I'm on 50% of them due to appraisals.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, and so, you know, the issue here in servicing is when you go to sell servicing, a buyer is expecting certain standard reps and warrants, and that is that, you know, the servicer or your subservicer has serviced these loans in compliance with agency requirements and regulations. And if there was any issue relative to servicing, any loss incurred, that they could come back to you and you would make them whole. The same goes through with what's called the selling reps, but it's truly the origination of the loan. And that's really obviously what we're all referring to in most cases. So if I'm selling someone $250 million of servicing rights, Fannie Mae servicing rights, and, you know, 1% of those loans have repurchases issued against them, the question now is, as you, the seller, do you have the capability to make me whole on $2.5 million worth of repurchases? And so servicers are faced with that, and I've always argued about this. I think servicers being the front line of defense for the repurchase demand is inappropriate, but that's been around for quite some time. Now, 10 years ago was the initiation by Fannie Mae, where you'll hear this term, the bifurcation of selling
yep.
reps and warrants, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, IMA was an integral part working with Fannie Mae to get their program off the ground, their pilot servicing aggregation initiative that actually created that bifurcation. And that program now exists independently with Fannie Mae and some of their partners, Chase, GMAC, Wells, Central Mortgage. And you have to be approved with Fannie to be able to sell loans with that bifurcation. And what that means is that Fannie Mae would then go directly to the originator and that the servicer is taken out of that line of defense. If you don't have that in place, then the servicer is the one obligated to make Fannie Mae whole. Now, you still get to defend the repurchase demand, but ultimately, you know, if that repurchase takes place, that's where this counterparty risk comes into play. And so buyers are very sensitive to what that originator's capability is to make them whole. Consequently, as an originator, it's also important that you're not pushing the edge of the envelope too often with your underwriting practices, and that you're creating good, solid loans in today's environment.
You know, one question I've got is regarding the value. I mean, Tom, you're one of the nation's recognized experts in valuing servicing. How does someone value the asset once they've made the decision to retain the servicing?
Well, you know, here again, either, you know, much of this can be done internally with accountants who have experience by purchasing several of the valuation models that are out there. But one should also be very active in keeping a pulse on the marketplace. And to do that, the most efficient way is to utilize a group like ours to be able to have the portfolio valued, and it should be valued on a monthly basis. You should be keeping up with trends relative to parameters and pricing parameters that are being applied.
Well, you know, it's fascinating as we look at the cycles we've gone through on servicing rights. And one of the areas is you used to be able to borrow against that, and you used to be able to get financing on that. That dried up for a period of time, largely. I think it was because of the TVW mess. Debacle, and then and I'm really seeing that is an essential part of having an ongoing retaining the servicing, especially if you can do it for any amount of time. What do you see as it relates to being able to finance MSRs, and then what impact will it have on the market one way or the other, if it's there or if it's not?
Yeah. First off, I would say kudos to Ted Tozer and the staff at Ginnie Mae, who recognized that their acknowledgement agreement was not acceptable to many lenders. And the TBW bankruptcy identified the issue. And basically, the acknowledgement agreement, that's the term that is used in the industry, whether it's with Fannie, Freddie, or Ginnie Mae. A lender needs to have an acknowledgement agreement in place to protect its interest as a secured party in the asset. Ginnie Mae recognized that in the TBW fiasco, what Fannie, Freddie, Fannie had been out, but what those acknowledgement agreements didn't do was truly protect the lender in the first position. The investor was taking their losses off the table first. Ginnie Mae now allows a secured party to make a move and protect its interest. FHFA should be addressed with this question on a daily basis in order to maintain integrity in this marketplace for their servicing, because their acknowledgement agreement is not to the level that Ginnie Mae's is today. And we do know of some major banks now who are providing warehouse origination to some to lenders. And as they've built up a servicing portfolio, they have accepted the Ginnie Mae acknowledgement agreement and now are providing financing facilities for the MSR asset.
That's excellent. It's really good to hear. That's a significant development compared to the contraction that took place in this era.
Well, but and we're really only at the tip of the iceberg, Dave, to be candid. I think we need more banks to recognize the value of the Ginnie Mae agreement, and we do need more pressure to develop a Fannie or Freddie acknowledgement agreement to allow banks to get comfortable so that we can generate this. Look, servicing built up over the last 20 years or 15 years in the hands of very few, and when the storm hit, then the colossal problem was created. And so we know that this industry historically has been developed through very bright, entrepreneurial, independent individuals who can do this business very effectively. And we need a regulatory environment and we need a banking environment to support that going forward so that we can maintain that integrity and that ability to service the customer.
You know, Tom, we've gotten just this topic really introduced. We're going to have you back another time to continue the dialogue. But for those that want to get a hold of you, what is the most effective way to reach you? I want your website and your phone number.
Well, the website, of course, is interactivemortgageadvisors.com. You can call me direct at area code 303-302-9234. And I'd be happy to talk.
Go ahead.
I'd be happy to talk ad nauseum. This is what we do every day.
Well, it's very valuable information. We appreciate you so much taking time out of your busy week. Alice, do you have any other questions?
I actually do, since we have a couple of minutes here.
Yeah, good.
You know, I know we kind of segued out there into a nice kind of happy summary there at the end, the acknowledgement agreements, but what has to be done in the industry. But my brain got stuck on the repurchase discussion a couple seconds ago.
Sure.
And I think this is something that, you know, we watched some mid-sized servicers very successfully manage a mid-sized servicing portfolio, and they're very excited about moving down this. And they, of course, have experienced their own, you know, repurchases. But, you know, so is there some good benchmarks you help folks with on this going forward? Because I think that could scare a lot of people off, knowing that now I have to try and I'm the last stop in the food chain, you know, on a repurchase. I don't have any buffer in between there. I'm the first one to lose money, and I may not have any recourse to anybody else at that point.
Well, I mean, where is it coming from? And that's the key. If I'm originating through my own channels and I'm retaining the servicing, I mean, my retail channel, I should have confidence in that my repurchases will be limited, if at all. If I am purchasing loans or working with brokers, then I've got to be sure I've got the appropriate QC channels in place, and then I do absolutely want to scrutinize my counterparties from an origination standpoint, because that's what it comes down to, and having the financial, you know, the financial wherewithal. So, you know, what is the volume of your portfolio relative to your balance sheet? I mean, the agencies already have requirements that, you know, require your capital or your net worth to increase with the size of your portfolio for that very same reason. But then if you're purchasing loans from others, you know, what is their balance sheet looking like relative to your exposure to that risk? And that has to be addressed as well. You know,
so can I just say, what if it's my retail origination? So, you know, if it's my own retail origination, I think I've got controls in my shop. Is there actually an argument to be made that I'm getting unjustified repurchases when it's coming to a big investor, and I feel I have legitimate ways to defend my files if I can work directly with Fannie or Freddie myself?
Yes, and that's, you know, there's another significant point that I wanted to address. The phrase we always use is control your own destiny.
Right.
So control your own destiny on the front end by being able to create your own underwriting guides in compliance with agency guides and sell loans direct to the agency. You're optimizing your ability both through origination practices and what you're offering to the customer, as well as what you're receiving on the capital market side through your loan execution. And then on the back end, by servicing, when those repurchase requests come out, you know exactly what needs to be done, and you're contacting and working directly with that investor or with that agency to defend that repurchase demand, as opposed to having to work through a third party, which was the entity that purchased your loan.
Right, and then being not really knowing how it was serviced. You know, obviously, if you see some pattern on the front end, I've always made a case, having overseen both areas, that what's going on one part of my operation shouldn't be exclusive of how to better manage the other part when you've got origination and servicing. So I think there's a benefit to having both of those work better together.
It is, without question. Now, you know, the other thing that I want to point out, too, and what one should consider is, you know, retaining servicing should be but another channel in your best execution model. And so, you know, the aggregators and the new participants that are coming into this space to fill the void still play a role in your day-to-day activity. And so maybe you don't retain 100%. Maybe you retain 50% and you still retain those relationships on the other 50%. But getting back to your point, in my opinion, the more you know and the more you manage on your own, the more responsibility you're taking to the process, and the better you will be able to defend it throughout.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Hey, Dave, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I didn't mean to commandeer that part of the conversation.
No,
but that
no.
Was
that. Well, okay. Unfortunately, I'm not in front of my computer right now, and I apologize that we had to do the last part of this interview with over my cell phone. We're traveling on spring break, and so we had a good internet connection earlier, but we obviously lost that. But at the time, it's just fascinating information. Let's give your phone number one more time for those that want to connect with you and want to just appreciate some. Thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I think your show provides a lot of value as well. But my number, again, it's 303-302-9234.
And your email?
Email.
It's first initial last name, so T as in Tom, P as in Patrick, I-E. R-C-Y at your IMA, Y-O-U-R-I, M as in Mary, A.com.
Perfect. I tell you, I encourage you, listeners, if you're considering the strategy, to get a hold of Tom and any of the guests that we've had on here. But Tom, when it comes to value, we're doing this to create value. And this is the guy that's got the expertise in this. I encourage you to get a hold of him and talk to him about your strategy to do so, to retain servicing. Appreciate you being with us again this week and each and every week. It's such a pleasure to have our listening audience be a part of our dialogue. Thank you so much for your feedback. And as Alice mentioned, next week we've got her coming back. We got you on. You're our special guest next week, Alice.
Well, you know, there's a lot to talk about with the HOP program and FHA changes as well.
Well, you've just been talking in Michigan and some of the other states. In fact, we're going to be doing a speaking tour together again on a number of things. So give us a little insight. Come on, tease the audience a little bit so they know what's coming up.
Well, we were talking about HARP at three different luncheons, and it was great to get, you know, a room of 100 mortgage bankers in a room. One, to see that, hey, look, the industry is still viable. We still want to get around and kind of work out our issues together. And we were doing, actually, in the session, there'd be something coming over the news wire, and someone would go, oh, that's so 3 seconds ago. Information is what's changing that fast on the HARP program as I was speaking on the topic, so helping people understand the program, understand some of the unanswered questions still, and then, of course, diving a little deeper into some of the things that we're seeing with FHA in particular. So a good program for originators who are looking to get out and increase their business with these new programs being offered.
Well, it's exciting. I can't wait for next week's program. Tom, thanks so much again for being with us. Wish you the very, very best, and we've got to have you back as we get further into this after some more questions come in. Appreciate it so much.
My pleasure, Dave. Would look forward. Thanks, Alice.
All right.
Oh, you're welcome, Tom. Thank you.
It's a joy to have all you all there. Alice, thank you so much for jumping in there when I lost connection there for a little while. Appreciate it so much. And a special thank you to
Dr.
Well, we're going to go skiing up here in New Mexico in Taos. So, the word is epic snow conditions. So we're going to go up there, the best in 10 years. So we're going to go enjoy them. And Tom was telling me it's probably good that we're going to New Mexico because they're a little scant on the snow there in Colorado. So we're heading down there. Or normally we get up into Tom's country up there in Denver, north of Denver.
Hey, we didn't get a chance to talk about Tom's drumming.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Tom, we heard about you. We heard about your drumming. In fact, Alice went out and did a search, and she actually found some things on the internet out there with you and your drumming. So, folks, this guy has more than just servicing values knowledge. He is an expert, and he's a regular drummer, and you're doing gigs all over Denver, right?
I'm keeping the dream alive, as we say.
All right.
Well, as the drums start as the background, that reminds us we're done with this program. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast, everybody. Tell your friends about it. We appreciate you. Also, some upcoming guests. We've got Jay Brinkman's going to be coming on later, giving an update on later on the 26th. So that's another upcoming broadcast you're not going to want to miss. We've got a whole lineup of really good guests. Appreciate you being a part of it. Have a great week, everyone. For those of you enjoying spring break, travel safe, as we are. And we'll look forward to talking to you again next week back on the radio. Have a great week, everyone.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.